Brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. With Saver, you earn unlimited 3% cash back on dining, entertainment, and at grocery stores. That's unlimited cash back on ordering takeout from home, or unlimited cash back on tickets to concerts and games. So grab a bite, grab a seat, and earn unlimited 3% cash back with the Saver Card. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's 8:35 a.m. on July 10th, 1962 in Crawford Hill, New Jersey. Inside the headquarters of Bell Laboratories, 52-year-old engineer John Pierce hunches over a malfunctioning television. He turns the dial, searching for the station he needs, but all he gets is static. Then John glances at the clock. He's running out of time. So out of frustration, John bangs his fist on top of the television. And the picture miraculously snaps into focus. A wry smile crosses John's lips. There's an irony in this poor signal. Today marks the launch of a rocket carrying Telstar, a new communication satellite that John has spent the last 2 years developing. And if Telstar works as planned, it will revolutionize radio and television broadcasting and give America a rare success in the space race. But right now, Telstar is still firmly on the ground, and John is stuck with a grainy television picture. His screen shows a black-and-white image of a Thor Delta rocket on a launch pad in Cape Canaveral, Florida. The Telstar satellite is safely stowed inside the rocket's hold. After fiddling with the antenna just a little bit longer, John barely has time to take his seat before a voice counts down the last few seconds. Then the rocket engines roar, flames shoot out, obscuring the launch pad from view for a moment before the Thor Delta rocket slowly lifts off, beginning a pioneering flight to take the world's first communications satellite into orbit. John Pierce and his colleagues at Bell Laboratories have spent years working on Telstar. But now that it's left the ground, there's nothing more they can do except watch and hope that all their efforts will pay off. If their technology works and the satellite makes it into orbit, the impact of Telstar will be felt for decades, and a new age of American science will be said to have begun on July 10, 1962.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is July 10th, 1962. Telstar reaches orbit. It's May 13th, 1960 at Cape Canaveral in Florida, 2 years before the launch of Telstar. Engineer John Pierce stands on one side of a giant lake, far from the Thor Delta rocket on a launch pad on the other side. John's here in an observation area to watch the rocket blast off into space. On board is Echo, a satellite which John has spent months preparing. 3 years ago, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, the world's first artificial satellite, and the United States has been lagging behind in the so-called space race ever since. Soviet success was a bitter pill for many Americans who asked why their country was apparently being left behind. So a few months after Sputnik was launched, U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower founded the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA. And now it's up to engineers like John Pierce to close the gap with the Soviets. After being inspired by the work of science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke, John has become obsessed with the concept of satellites. Right now, long-distance messages are transmitted under the sea through cables or over the air with radio waves. But both technologies are limited in how far they can carry messages without distortion. So over the past 2 years, John has been part of a team at Bell Laboratories that's hoping to use a satellite to overcome these limitations. The result of their work is Echo, a satellite designed to passively reflect microwave signals from a transmitter at one point on the Earth to a receiver at another. But until Echo reaches orbit, no one at Bell can be sure it'll work. John's not a superstitious man, but today's date feels like a bad omen, Friday the 13th. John tries to push thoughts of the old superstition out of his mind as the countdown enters its final stages. Then the thrusters fire and the ground beneath John shakes. There's a cheer and applause from the crowd watching as the slender rocket rises and clears the launch pad. But the cheers soon fade. Something isn't right. The trajectory of the Thor Delta is off. The rocket climbs several thousand feet in the air, but then falls and crashes into the Atlantic Ocean, and John's satellite is gone with it. After the failure of this rocket launch, John has no option but to go back to Bell Laboratories and build a new Echo. He doesn't have much time, though. Bell is given a new launch window that's just 3 months from now. Given this tight deadline, the new satellite's design remains the same as before, a 100-foot balloon squashed inside a 26-inch container, which once it reaches orbit, will inflate the balloon automatically and provide a large surface that will reflect transmissions back to Earth. Long days and nights at the lab follow, but when the next launch date arrives, John and his team are ready. On August 12, 1960, the new Echo satellite is strapped into another Thor Delta rocket. This time, the rocket lifts off without any hitches, and Echo successfully reaches orbit. John tracks the satellite from Bell Laboratories in New Jersey, while a second team follows it from California. They wait until the balloon inflates, then send a test signal. It bounces off the satellite and is received on the other side of the country. Echo is working exactly as designed. So with confirmation that the satellite is operational, John hits play on a pre-recorded tape. The voice of President Dwight D. Eisenhower is soon picked up by radio operators all across America.
This is President Eisenhower speaking. It is a great personal satisfaction to participate in this first experiment in communications.
The success of Echo proves that sending signals up to space and back down to Earth is possible. But John's work is far from finished. Echo is just a passive satellite. All it does is bounce signals back to Earth. For satellites to truly transform global communication, John knows he needs to make a new device that can amplify and process signals as well. But to do that, John will need to convince his colleagues at Bell, NASA, and the U.S. government to invest even more time, manpower, and money before the Soviets beat them to it again.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
It's July 27th, 1961 at Bell Laboratories in Crawford Hills, New Jersey, 1 year after Echo became the first passive communication satellite in orbit. John Pierce opens the door of his team's lab and is greeted by a flurry of activity. Engineers and scientists are all hard at work. Papers, wires, and electronics are scattered over every surface, and empty coffee cups spill over the top of an overflowing trash can. John and his team have been working around the clock for the last 14 months, and with everyone's focus on the work, the lab's become a bit of a mess. As soon as Echo was shown to be operational, John was tasked by his bosses at Bell with designing a new and improved satellite. John's project was given the name Telstar, and its aim was to transmit not just phone conversations, but live television and telegraph transmissions as well. Recently, though, work on the satellite has taken on a new urgency. 2 months ago, the Soviet Union stunned the world by passing two major milestones in the space race. With the flight of Vostok 1, Yuri Gagarin became the first human in space and the first to enter orbit. He circled the globe in a tiny capsule for 1 hour and 48 minutes before returning to Earth in southwest Russia. The Soviet press seized on Gagarin's flight as yet another propaganda victory over the West, and its impact is still evident today in the long, tired faces of John's colleagues. They've been working nonstop to give America a much-needed win over its Soviet rivals. So despite John's own tiredness and full workload, he stops at every desk, giving his workers as much time as they need to explain what they're working on. Whenever John is in town, he always tries to inspire his team this way. But more and more, John is being forced to spend time away from the lab. Over the last few months, he's been distracted by complex negotiations with NASA and the federal government over funding. The Echo satellite was a fairly basic piece of engineering. It didn't rely on any electrical circuitry once it reached orbit. The satellite itself inflated from its small container thanks to a chemical reaction, benzoic acid reacting with heat from the sun and transforming from a solid into a gas. But Telstar is a far more complex device. It's a 34-inch sphere filled with transponders, transistors, and solar panels. And whether such fragile parts will survive the trip into space and hold up in the harsh conditions there is still purely theoretical. John doesn't even have all the parts he needs yet. Telstar will require signal boosters with a price tag of $3.5 million each, and NASA is reluctant to spend so much money on an unproven technology. So John is spending much more of his time in Washington, D.C. lobbying. Although he feels out of his element among the politicians and lawmakers, he still passionately argues that placing an active communication satellite like Telstar in orbit is a goal worth pursuing. He emphasizes the advantage that America will gain over the USSR if its military forces are able to communicate across the world in mere seconds, and he also reminds the politicians that satellite communications are the only part of the space race where the USA has the lead. The country needs Telstar for propaganda reasons as much as anything else. Eventually, John's month-long lobbying campaign pays off. The politicians in Washington and the officials at NASA agree to release the funds necessary to build Telstar. But John can tell that many are still reluctant to send so much money to Bell Laboratories. Bell is a private company owned by corporate giant AT&T, which is under fire for the monopoly it holds over America's telecommunications industry. In off-the-record conversations, several politicians confirm that NASA is soon going to phase Bell Laboratories out of the American space program. Telstar will be John's last involvement in a space mission, and if anything goes wrong this time, all his team's hard work over the last year will have been wasted. But that hasn't happened yet. Telstar is given a launch window in the summer of 1962. But once again, the success of a satellite produced by John Pierce and Bell Laboratories will depend on whether a Thor Delta rocket can make it into orbit without malfunctioning. John will be powerless to do anything but cross his fingers and hope. It's July 10th, 1962, in Andover, Maine, in the final few seconds of the countdown to the launch of Telstar aboard a Thor Delta rocket. Rising from an enormous plume of white-gray smoke, the rocket begins to climb into the sky. As it soars higher, the rocket's first stage sputters out and breaks away. Then the second stage engine takes over, climbing higher still. Finally, a third stage ignites and pushes Telstar into orbit. For Fred Kappel, it feels like he's been holding his breath for hours. But when it's confirmed that Telstar has reached orbit successfully, he takes his seat in a high-tech laboratory and then straightens his tie. The 59-year-old chairman of AT&T is here for the first test of the Telstar satellite, and he wants to look sharp for the cameras. But Fred's not just here to watch. He's also been given the honor of saying the first words ever broadcast via active satellite communication. Fred picks up the telephone in front of him. If all goes to plan, the voice on the other end of the line will be that of Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson in Washington. Now's the moment of truth. Fred clears his throat and speaks into the receiver.
Good evening, Mr. Vice President. This is Fred Kappel calling from the Earth Station at Andover, Maine. The call is being relayed through our Telstar satellite, as I am sure you know. How do you hear me?
You're coming through nicely, Mr. Kappel.
Over the next few minutes, Fred and Vice President Johnson speak of the great potential of satellite communications and make it clear that Telstar is a victory for the American people in the space race. A few hours later, the first television broadcasts are sent from the U.S. across the Atlantic to the United Kingdom and France. And the first face to be seen is that of Fred Kappel, talking about the benefits Telstar will bring to the world. The successful launch of Telstar will prove that John Pierce's dream of reliable, long-distance communication is possible. And over the next few decades, NASA will launch thousands more satellites, revolutionizing global communications and allowing events from around the world to be shared in real time. And although the original Telstar will cease to function and be replaced by more advanced satellites, it will continue to orbit the Earth for more than 60 years after its groundbreaking launch into space on July 10, 1962. Next on History Daily, July 13, 1985. The benefit concert Live Aid amasses millions of dollars for famine relief, well over a billion viewers worldwide. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazib. Sound design by Gabriel Gould. Supervising sound designer, Matthew Filler. Music by Thrum. This episode is written and researched by Owen Paul Nichols. Edited by Scott Reeves. Managing producer, Emily Burke. Executive producers are William Simpson for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.